Let us turn to the Word of God in the book of Genesis and take as our text the 21st chapter and verse 22. Book of Genesis, chapter 21 and verse 22. At that time, Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his forces, said to Abraham, God is with you in everything you do. God is with you in everything that you do. Now, as you know, we've been examining the life of Abraham for some time, and last week we saw how he prayed for the salvation of any righteous men in the town of Sodom and Gomorrah, and how he observed the destruction of those cities in the plain, and how his nephew Lot was the only one who escaped with some of his family. And in the looking at this week's passage, we've noticed that Abraham had by that time traveled to this town of Hebron, which you see up there. And this part of the Dead Sea is where the site of Sodom and Gomorrah were before. I told you that the Dead Sea was about 1,400 feet deep, but that this southern part was only about 12 feet deep, and at certain dry seasons, only 3 or 4 feet deep. And so you find that that was the district in which this terrible judgment of God took place. Now, at this point in our narrative, as you see from the first verse of chapter 20, he leaves Hebron and comes to the Negev, which in the authorized version is called the Southland. Now, the Southland was that particular area. And he, for one period, was near the town of Gerar, and then came down to this section. I wonder if that can be moved a little. Thank you. That's right, thank you very much. Between Kadesh and Shur. Now, there was a roadway that came along here, and it was called the Way to Shur. And when you look back in the earlier parts of Genesis, you'll find that Hagar, when she became pregnant by Abraham and was persecuted by Sarah, escaped to the land of Shur. There seemed to have been a line of forts in Shur, which was Egypt's protecting line against invading nomads. And so there were two roads. There was the road called the Way of the Philistines along the coast. There was another roadway called the Way to Shur. And it was along that roadway, along the Way to Shur, that Abraham came. Now, we are dealing with what is called the Middle Bronze Period, Period 1. There were two Middle Bronze Periods. And this Middle Bronze Period continued from 2200 BC to 1950 BC. Now, may I remind you of the approximate date of Abram's birth that I gave you before, that he was probably born about the year 2165 BC. You know, he was 75 when he left Haran, so that brings it down to 2095 BC when he came to Canaan. He's been there 25 years, so it's now about 2070 BC. Now, archaeologists have indicated that this whole area was quite thickly populated at that period. It wasn't so after 1900 BC. And these dotted lines that you can see here are wadis or rivers that only run after showers of rain. They can be dry and filled with dust for the rest of the year, but when there is heavy rainfall, these become raging torrents. And of course, when they dry up, you will still get water if you sink wells near these wadis. Now, that's the geographical background for the passage that we are looking at this morning. And Abraham has decided to leave the district of Hebron. You remember we saw last week that from near Hebron, he could look down to where the cities of the plain were and saw the smoke rising like the smoke of a furnace. Now, he leaves that area and he comes to wander in this district, which is called the land of the Philistines. Now, many critics of the Bible among the liberal theologians have said the Philistines did not appear in the area until many centuries later. But as so often the case, liberal theologians are not always correct. And further archaeological evidence has indicated that there was quite a large amount of connection between Palestine and the Aegean district of Greece and Crete particularly. And it would seem that Philistines from Crete had begun to infiltrate this area as merchants many, many centuries before their soldiers conquered the district. And so Abimelech represents one of these early Philistines. And the very name Abimelech is a Semitic word showing you that these early Aegean colonists adopted Semitic titles, because Abimelech is not a name of a man, but the title of a man. Every king of the Philistines at that period was called Abimelech. Well, so much for the background. Now, you read in the 20th chapter and the first verse that Abram moved into this south region of the Negev and lived between Kadesh and Shur, wandered in this good pastoral land at that time. And while he was staying in or near Gerar, where Abimelech had his capital and center of residence, Abram said of his wife Sarah, "She is my sister." Now, this may come as a tremendous shock to us. It should come as a shock to us, because we have seen Abraham in our studies in the last few weeks as a great man of God. We have seen him as a man who pleaded on behalf of Sodom and Gomorrah and interceded with God. And God allowed him to intercede in a very bold and yet at the same time a very humble manner. But he got to grips with God. And we saw a few weeks ago how he pleaded in this remarkable way, as you find in chapter 18. And then we saw last week how he was the one who observed the answer to his prayer. The answer to his prayer, "Shall not the Lord of all the earth do right?" And he saw that God did do what was right by the destruction of that corrupt and debased society in those towns in the plain. Here we find him, very soon after that, in this position of speaking a lie. In speaking this lie that his wife was not his wife, because that was the point of his statement, he was really showing that he had succumbed to a great panic. He'd come to this new district, and he was fearful, and he was afraid that the people might kill him and take his wife from him. There's no indication, of course, that at 90 years of age she still had the beauty of youth, but you must remember that by this time Abraham was a very powerful chieftain, and he had large flocks of sheep and large herds of cattle and many, many servants and their families. So he was a man of power and a man of note, and it would be conceivable that someone might endeavor to take his wife for the sake of being able to say that they had married the wife of a person who was so well known. For that reason, you find him getting into this terrible panic and saying, "Well, you say that you are my sister." And she agreed, and this is what was spread abroad. And you find that Abimelech thought, "Well, if she is only his sister, I can take her into my harem, and I will gain a good reputation of having a member of this wealthy tribe, a member of this notable tribe in my harem. It'll be a useful alliance for me." And so that's what happened. And poor Abraham is left with a realization that he is in danger of making shipwreck of God's plan. Because God had said to him that this time next year, Sarah will bear you a son, and you will call him Isaac. You remember he had said that to Abraham back in chapter 17, and he repeated it to Sarai in chapter 18, and he had given the name Isaac, and he had also said that in Isaac your name will be called. And he has indicated that the messianic promise is going to come down through Isaac and not through Ishmael. All that, has Abram forgotten it? Has Abram, the man of God, the friend of God, has he prejudiced God's promise that this woman, his wife, has been handed over to another king? What is going to come of God's promise? What is going to come of the promise of the Messiah, the seed of the woman, the great descendant of Abraham through whom all the world is going to be blessed? Do you see the nature of this awful sin, the awful consequence of this compromise and of this fear on the part of Abraham? And this shows us the great grace of God. Because although Abraham does not come well out of this narrative, God comes out very well. Because you read in the third verse that God came to Abimelech in a dream one night and said to him, "You are as good as dead because of the woman you have taken. She is a married woman." In the mercy of God, Abimelech had not entered into marital relationships with Sarah. And Abimelech had not gone near her, so he said, "Lord, will you destroy an innocent nation? Did he not say to me, 'She is my sister'? And didn't she also say, 'He is my brother'? I have done this with a clear conscience and clean hands." And God said, "I know you've done it with a clean conscience and with clean hands. And so I have kept you from sinning against me." God is not the author of sin, but God is the one who prevents more sin from taking place. God exercises a restraining influence upon a sinful world. Have you known that? Have you ever had the experience of wanting to commit a sin? And suddenly the circumstances change and you cannot do so. And when you look back, you say with horror, "Well, I almost committed a great sin, but the Lord drew me back from the edge of the precipice." That's a very remarkable thing. And there's a mystery about it. You don't know how it has taken place, but you know it has. And here you find that Abimelech has taken this woman to be his wife, but the Lord has restrained him and has kept him. And therefore, she has not entered into marital relations with him at all. He has been kept from that. The Lord's amazing protection over Sarai, when Abraham, her husband, had not protected her, when she herself had laid herself open to this danger by saying, "He is my brother." And yet God had intervened. For the sake of his own character, for the sake of his own promise, for the sake of the Messiah that is going to come in the family of Isaac that is yet to be born, he has protected Sarai in a direct and remarkable way. The grace of God. You say, "But Abram didn't deserve it." Of course he didn't. And Sarah didn't deserve it. Of course she didn't. This is the mercy of God. This is the preventing grace, where God prevents you from committing a sin worse than you have already committed. And so you see that if you look at the end of the chapter, of this end of the 20th chapter, you find that the Lord had closed up every womb in Abimelech's household because of Abram's wife, Sarah. And this is how he discovered that something was wrong. Now this shows us, of course, that Sarah has been some time in the household of Abimelech, for all the families there to realize that no woman was becoming pregnant. And then they begin to say, "Well, what has taken place?" And at that moment, God speaks to Abimelech and says, "You're a dead man if you touch this woman." And he says, "Well, you know that I didn't do this with intent. You know, it was not my purpose to take another man's wife. I didn't know that she was another man's wife." And God said, "Well, that's why I prevented you from harming her. Now return," he says in the 7th verse, "return the man's wife, for he is a prophet, and he will pray for you." Now this is the first time that the word prophet is mentioned in the Bible. And you notice it does not refer to foretelling the future. because the basis of the word prophet is not foretelling the future. The basis of the word prophet or nabi is a speaker. And that speaker can be a preacher or he can be praying. And it is in his prayer life that Abram is here called. He is a prophet. He is a prophet. And he will pray for you. He will speak to me on your behalf and you will live. But if you do not return her, you may be sure that you and all yours will die. You notice the obedience of Abimelech. It indicates to us that some understanding of one true God still remained among some people outside the covenant nation that would be descended from Abraham. I remember reading many years ago of a missionary that had been working among the Shan tribes in Burma, in North Burma, and he had been there for over 20 years. And suddenly one day he heard one farmer, one tribesman, losing his temper and cursing in the name of the great God of all. He stopped the man. He said, "I've lived 20 years amongst you. I've never heard you mention this great God. You've been worshipping the spirits all around you and you've been living in fear. Why is it you do not worship this great God? Who is he?" "Oh," said the tribesman, "he is the one who is God over all. Why don't you worship him?" And the answer was, "He doesn't do us any harm." But he knew about him. He knew about him. It had taken the missionary 20 years to understand that they did know about God. They didn't worship him, and that was their sin. Now here was this man Abimelech. He did know about the one true God. And when God spoke to him, he knew who was speaking to him. And he also knew that God was righteous. "You will not destroy the righteous with the guilty. You know that I had no intention to take a man's wife." And God said, "Yes, I did know." And so you find him early the next morning, summoning all his officials and telling them what has happened. And a great fear of God comes amongst them. It's interesting to notice that in non-Christian religions, sometimes you'll find a strong awareness that adultery is wrong, that marriage is sacred, that to take another man's wife is an awful thing to do. And you find this here among the people of Abimelech. And so then Abimelech calls Abram. And you have for the second time in Abram's history, Abram being rebuked by a king who was not a member of the covenant people. Do you remember when it last occurred? Back in chapter 13, do you remember when Abram had recently come to the land of Canaan and there was a famine and without consulting God he had gone down into Egypt and there he began to be afraid that he might be murdered in order that his wife might enter the harem and he said, "You say, I am your brother." And remember that Pharaoh took Sarah and again a plague occurred on that occasion and he discovered the truth. And remember what he did? He summoned Abraham to him and really rebuked him and said, "Why have you done this?" Now he said, "Take her and go." And Pharaoh gave orders about Abram to his men and they sent him on his way with his wife and everything he had. He was sent out in disgrace from Pharaoh's land and he came back to Bethel and cried unto the Lord and repented back to the place where God had spoken to him. Bethel, the house of God. And there he cried unto God. Why has he done the same thing again? Remember, it's 25 years later. Ah, sins you committed 25 years ago, you've got the victory over them now. You sure? You sure? Have you never fallen back to an old sin? There is a Welsh hymn that says, "I fall 100 times to the same sin." Do you know anything about that? Poor Abraham. He thought he was free from this sin, but he succumbed to it. As the pressures increased upon him, and the pressures can increase upon you suddenly. While he was praying over Sodom and Gomorrah, he was there like a prince with God. And as he looked in sorrow upon the rising smoke and realized that the Lord of all the earth had done just, he was the friend of God. Oh, so soon he has fallen to an old sin of 20, 25 years ago. He hadn't expected that. Do you know what Paul said when he wrote to the Corinthians? You who stand, make sure that you do not fall. You who think that you are safe, make sure that you do not fall. There are such dark and deep wickednesses within our hearts, and we have such a busy devil, and circumstances can change in a kaleidoscopic manner, and you suddenly get caught out, and you fall to an old sin. Poor Abraham. Oh, the grace of God. The grace of God to intervene in Abimelech's court. The grace of God to safeguard the chastity of Sarah. The grace and mercy of God that he made Abimelech call Abraham and rebuke him. But really, the rebuke is remarkably mild. Abimelech hasn't lost his temper as Pharaoh has done. He doesn't expel Abram from his territory. But he speaks straight. He says to him, what have you done? What have you done to us? How have I wronged you that you've brought such great guilt upon me and my kingdom? You have done things to me that should not be done. Oh, he has spoken directly, frankly, truly to him. But he has also spoken with much self-discipline in his words. And what's the consequence? Abraham confesses all. Now, that's a difficult thing to do. He confesses all. Abraham replied, I said to myself, there is surely no fear of God in this place. And he was wrong. Abimelech did have a fear of God. So he has to say to Abimelech, I misjudged you. I criticized you without knowing anything at all about you. I assumed that you had no knowledge of God and no fear of God. There is surely no fear of God in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. Now that's the first confession. Very humiliating for him. But he did confess it. And you know, when you've done someone harm, you are to confess to him. It's not sufficient to confess to God. If you've done someone harm, you must confess to him. It's not easy, but it's right. And Abram did that. And then he said, besides, she really is my sister, the daughter of my father, though not of my mother, and she became my wife. In those days, you had this marriage between half-brothers and half-sisters, which later in the book of Leviticus was forbidden. But in the early generations of the earth's history, this did take place. What is he confessing there? He is confessing to having committed a sin which we call a white lie. But a white lie is a sin, because the purpose of a white lie is to hide part of the truth. In a white lie, you make a statement. As far as the statement goes, it is correct. But it covers up another aspect of the truth which you want to hide. So it is deceptive. And there is no such thing as a white lie. It is a sin. And he confesses that he'd been guilty of this kind of casuistry. She really is my sister. And she became my wife. So he is confessing the truth. He is opening his heart out to this man, Abimelech. And he is confessing all the wrong that he did against him. And he goes a third step. And he says, when God had me wander from my father's household, I said to her, this is how you can show your love to me. Everywhere we go, say of me, he is my brother. So he's confessing to a policy that they've adopted for 25 years. But they've only had occasion to put that policy into action twice. Again, the mercy of God. But nevertheless, it was an agreement between them. And it was a wrong agreement between them. Because it indicated that he didn't have full faith in God. At times, Abraham has tremendous faith in God. In other occasions like this one, his faith stumbles and falls. So like ourselves, isn't it? There are times when you know that God has given you victory and you've had a measure of faith that has been really tremendous. There have been other times when you've been in a flat spin, in a complete panic, and you've done and said things, and I as well, and we've all done this, for which we regret. And here is Abraham in this predicament. But he does confess. What does Abimelech do? He honors Abraham. Now that's an amazing thing. Why is that? Well, come back to the text that I've taken from the next chapter. When Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his forces, come to Abraham and say, God is with you in everything you do. But couldn't you imagine Abraham saying, well, God is not with me. I have lied. I have been deceptive. I have prejudiced my future. I've really brought the whole promise of God into danger. But Abimelech saw Abraham as a man of God who had stumbled. I remember hearing Dr. Lloyd-Jones say that when you're climbing up a mountain, if you slip and you fall and you slide, you do not slide down to the bottom of the mountain. You may slide down a fair distance, but you don't slide down to the bottom. And Abraham had stumbled and had fallen, and it was a sin, and he was rebuked for it, and he confessed it, but he was restored. And Abimelech had sufficient spiritual discernment to know that God's hand was upon this man. And God's hand is upon you and upon me, not because we deserve it, but because of his mercy. And we are always trying to say, well, Lord, I have now had victory over that, so I've grown in stature in your sight. No, you have not. You are still in need of mercy. Because however great the victory we may receive, it is not 100%. There is sin sliding into it. There is sin coming into our prayers. There is sin coming to everything that we are doing. And it's all of mercy. And we need to grasp this. And although we say with our intellect that we do understand it, our actions betray our words. We are constantly coming back to the point of saying, well, God will be pleased with me now. I've done this, I've done that. Abraham needs mercy up to the very end. Abraham is justified in the sight of God by faith. And Abimelech has seen that. God is with him. Not because he deserves it, I can see that he is a sinner. Not because he has earned it, I can see that he's been disobedient. But I've got to admit that God is with him. And that's the wonderful thing. That's the wonderful thing. So when you and I are caught out in a fault, please do not sit on your haunches weeping and saying, well, all my life is ruined and now God will never be pleased to me and he'll never use me again. I've made shipwreck and I might as well give it all up. Listen, my friend, it is by grace you are saved. It is by mercy you are saved. It is by the undeserved favor of God that you and I are saved. Do you remember in what we saw last Sunday? God reached out to save Lot. And we looked last week at the way in which Lot had compromised. And yet he was a believer. But he had compromised dreadfully, and we know that his life ended shamefully. But the Lord brought him out of Sodom. And a few weeks later, or a few months later, God has to do a comparable thing with Abram. Bring him out of the mess that he has made. The net that he has woven for his own feet, the net which he has woven and which he has tripped over, and there he is enmeshed in his own schemes, and the Lord has to rescue him. Oh, the goodness of God, the grace of God, the love of God, the great patience of God. Do you remember what it says in the book of Deuteronomy? We saw it in the Bible studies earlier on. not because you're a great nation, not because you're a famous nation, has God done these things for you? You're a little people, you're a small group, but because God had mercy upon you. It is God choosing you and bringing you to himself and carrying you on eagle's wings back to the nest. Oh, how the Lord wishes to teach us this lesson so that it may be ingrained in us, that we might know day after day that it is by mercy and mercy alone that I stand. And so you find, therefore, that Abimelech brought a gift to Abraham and brought him these sheep and the cattle and male and female slaves and gave them and returned Sarah his wife and then said, I am giving your brother 1,000 shekels of silver. This is to cover the offense against you before all who are with you. You are completely vindicated. The authorized version at this point doesn't give the more correct translation. The authorized version says, this is a covering for your eyes. What it really means is this. No one need belittle you. I am honoring you. I am honoring your husband. But notice also the rebuke to her. I am honoring your brother. He's using the term that she used. You can hardly resist that little bit of sarcasm maybe. But nevertheless, he is honoring Abram. And then in the end of the 21st chapter, we see that as Abram continued to live in the district, Abimelech and his commander of his forces came and said, now let's make an agreement. Swear to me here before God that you will not deal falsely with me or my children or my descendants. Can you live in the company of a man who has rebuked you? Can you live in the vicinity where you have really made a mistake? Abram, you see, didn't go back to Hebron. He didn't go further along the road to Shur. He continued to live in the vicinity of Abimelech. That shows his humility. If he'd gone away to another district, he might say, well, I can start my life over again. Nobody need know. But Abram was quite prepared for people to know that he was a sinner saved by grace. You know my faults, he would say to Abimelech. My God has been very kind, and I confess that. And so he continues to live as a witness in that district, to be a man who is a sinner. To be a man on whom God has shown favor for no reason at all, except that God has chosen to show him mercy. And the glory of God is revealed to Abimelech. And maybe we shall find Abimelech in heaven, I do not know. But certainly, through Abraham's sin and God's intervention, he learned more about God. Through Abraham's confession of his sin, and through Abram's apology, and through Abram's willingness to enter into a treaty with him, and to continue to live in that area, he learned a great deal about the grace of God. Now this is very strange, that God is not the author of your sin and mine, but he can use it to show his grace and to draw others unto himself. And that may well have been the experience of Abimelech. And so Abram agrees to make this treaty. And yet, if you notice in the 25th verse of the 21st chapter, after having made this treaty with Abimelech, Abram complained about a well of water that Abimelech's servants had seized. But Abimelech said, I didn't know about it. Nobody told me until today. You did not tell me, and I heard about it only today. Now, what does that indicate? It indicates that Abram could endure wrong quietly for a long time until God gave him the opportunity to make the proper complaint in the proper place and in the proper manner. If Abraham had said at the beginning, I've got a complaint against you, then Abimelech would have assumed that this was Abram's excuse for not wanting to enter into a treaty with him, and for not wanting to swear an oath of friendship with him. But Abraham, although he had been mistreated by the servants of Abimelech, still did not hold that against Abimelech, but said, "Yes, I will be a friend of yours. I will enter into a treaty with you." And after having made the treaty, he said, "Now look, there is a disagreement here that you are not aware of," and he explains it. And so Abimelech again put that right, rectified it, and Abraham brought sheep and cattle to make a covenant with Abimelech. Now you remember from what we saw back in chapter 15 that there was a particular manner of making a covenant. You brought sheep and cattle, and you killed them, and you cut their corpses in half, and you placed the halves opposite one another, and the two that were making the covenant would walk together down the blood-soaked pathway between the carcasses. And then when that was done, Abram gave an additional present of 7 ewes. And Abimelech said, "What's the meaning of this?" And he said, "Please accept them as a witness that I have dug this well and it is mine." And Abimelech does accept it. And so the place was called Beersheba, which means in two things. It means the well of 7 and the well of an oath. The primary meaning is the well of 7. And the treaty is made. And Abram planted a tamarisk tree. A tamarisk tree is a tree whose wood lasts for a very long time. And the reason why he planted a tamarisk tree, not as the authorized version says, a grove was associated with the illicit and immoral pagan worship of the Canaanites. He planted a single tamarisk tree. It was to remind him that his God was an everlasting God. This tree, whose wood stands for centuries. Our God is an everlasting God. What's he doing? He's witnessing, isn't he? He is openly worshipping God. In the midst of all these Philistines, he plants this tamarisk tree, and there he comes to worship periodically. And they know he does. And they know that he is worshipping the everlasting God, who has shown him mercy. If you feel that you have sinned over a long period of time and that you're in a predicament and you don't know how to get out of it, come before God, the everlasting God, and say, "Lord, get me out of this mess. Get me out of this net which I've woven for my own feet. And if I've wronged anyone, give me the humility to confess it. And turn the whole thing to your glory. And make me a witness in spite of all this." And this is what happened with Abram. And so, though we find this friend of God having been very shabby in his treatment of God at this juncture, you see the grace of God. So that Abimelech and his commander could say, "God is with you in everything you do. God is with you. Emmanuel, God with us." And that is the meaning of the coming of the Lord Jesus Christ, isn't it? Christ came to be with us. We are sinners. We betray him. We deny him. Even after we become Christians, we are unfaithful and unprofitable servants. But he is still Emmanuel, God with us. On that cross, he died for me, he died for you, he died for every sinner who trusts in him. On that cross, he paid that penalty. And that penalty is of eternal value. It is effective. Whatever your sin and my sin may be, the sins of the past, the sins of the present, and the sins that regrettably we will commit before our death, because no man is perfect, all that has been atoned for by your Savior if you are really in relationship with him. May God grant that we may live as men and women who have been forgiven and who will still need to be forgiven. And let the world know that we still need to be forgiven. He is the God that is the eternal God who has pity on those who have faith in him. May he bless us for his name's sake. Amen.